This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
What does it feel like to survive an overdose?
I should not be here. I didn't think that I was going to be here when I was 23.
Coming up on Hack, you're going to hear what that experience is like. How do you fall into a drug addiction when you've basically just left primary school?
Could not see the light at the end of the tunnel. In those moments, I just wanted to feel nothing.
G'day, it's Dave Marchese here with you. Soon you're going to hear Clay's story. You don't want to miss it. It's intense, but it is worth listening to. That is coming up later. First, though, a story that has been massive this week, you've probably heard something about.
Hack.
The Divine Playhouse has been ordered to stop engaging in offensive trade by its landlord after religious groups protested against its opening night.
On Triple J.
Yeah, just 1 week after opening its doors, a live music venue in Sydney forced to close amid a storm of controversy. Because this performance space had opened in what was a former church. It had been almost 100 years ago a church. And it led to protests kicking off. Now the queer group putting on events there is facing eviction. In a bit, we're going to have a debate about this. And you're going to hear from both sides. But first, Alice Angeloni has this update.
Hey chickens, I'm just going through my diary, or as I like to call it, my gay agenda.
A man dressed as a nun walking around with a dildo in his hand.
Was wondering if everyone had tickets to Two Queers.
A fiery culture war has kicked off over a pop-up event space in Sydney.
All of these degenerates only hated Christianity.
Last week, a heritage-listed building in the CBD reopened as an inclusive performance space, particularly for the LGBT community.
Pop on down, it's the Unholy Playhouse in Kent Street.
This is just not acceptable.
So, what's the issue? Well, it's in a deconsecrated church, which was stripped of its religious status in the 1930s and has operated as a theatre for decades. The building is owned by developers and was rented out to heaps gay events before a massive renovation of the block. The pop-up was initially called the Unholy Playhouse, with a last-minute name changed to the Divine Playhouse following some complaints. But the events were spotted by Christian influencers.
This is their Instagram page making fun of our church.
Who said it was making a mockery of Christianity.
Nuns kissing each other on their pages. They've even said they're going to do a live exorcism.
Dozens of people gathered in prayer and protest outside the venue on opening night, which has meant events like an emo night that Jamie had tickets to got cancelled.
We come from Newcastle. We were halfway to Sydney when we saw the Instagram post saying that it had been cancelled. Obviously, we were very devastated.
The building's landlord ordered Divine Playhouse to cease carrying out an offensive trade or face eviction, which has forced them to close the venue and cancel all events.
It's gone unused and unloved, and now that our community has decided to fill it with love and life and performance, that's when they get mad.
Well, the New South Wales government has copped criticism for supporting the event with a $100,000 grant.
What an absolute disgrace this place is. The New South Wales Labor State government, shame on you.
But the State Minister for Arts, John Graham, has backed the venue and said the closure is a step backwards for Sydney. The conversation has flared, getting picked up by mainstream media on the left and right, while petitions on both sides of this debate have already gathered thousands of signatures too.
Hack on Triple J.
Alice Angeloni reporting there. And look, obviously there is two very different takes on this issue, so let's unpack them a bit more. Have a discussion. And in the Hack studio, I'm joined by entertainer, et cetera, who was one of those who performed at the Divine Playhouse, et cetera. Big week.
It's been a lot happening, but a lot of interesting conversations coming out of this week, which I'm sure we'll talk about today.
Yeah. I'm also joined by Catholic creator Antonia Marie, who was against what was happening at the Divine Playhouse. Antonia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me in, Dave.
Let's start with you, et cetera, because you were performing at the Playhouse on the opening night when all of this kind of started to kick off. What was that like?
I mean, I've performed at a lot of events that have had protests at them before. I've done drag story times that have had protests at them. So I'm not a stranger to people opposing my activities in drag. But it was kind of a shock to me to see that many people turning up out of nowhere. It felt unusual to have this juxtaposition of something that we were so excited about and so proud of that we'd spent so much time pulling together, and then to have the opposition to it. Honestly, we all kind of couldn't really understand where that was coming from.
And Tony, you were one of those who didn't feel comfortable with the show that Etc. was part of. What made you uncomfortable?
I just want to make something clear. The reason people are protesting or are upset is not anything to do with you being queer. We are more than happy for people to have queer spaces and to be celebrated, because that's the greatest thing about living in Sydney and Australia. We're allowed to have different beliefs and opinions and be celebrated. I just think the thing that caused a lot of uproar was that a lot of the focus of the show was related to Catholicism and Christianity, and included things that are really sacred to people. Items, statues, the crucifix of Jesus, unholy water, the body of Christ being used as McDonald's chips. Those things are really sacred to some people and are really a part of some people's identity. And that really kind of, I think, rubbed people the wrong way. And their immediate reaction was extreme anger. Yeah, very passionate people for two different things.
Definitely passionate on both sides, yeah. I think it's fair to say. I mean, Etc. What would you say to those who have raised concerns that this was mocking religion and Catholicism in general?
Yeah, I mean, I understand. I was raised Catholic. I went through 14 years of extremely conservative Catholic education, going to Mass every week. I've had all my sacraments. It's a complex one, because I can fully understand and empathise with how people were offended. But on the other side, there is a reclamation that has to happen of symbolism that has been used to oppress queer people. The Catholic Church my entire life has told me that who I am is intrinsically wrong. I have had to, through my art, reclaim some of that symbolism in order to process that trauma. And one of the things I saw on the night that was called out multiple times by on a lot of online content was this idea of men dressing up as nuns. And the people in those images are part of an order called the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, who were founded in the 80s in America, when the Catholic Church actually refused to go into wards of people dying of HIV/AIDS. And so the queer community had to create their own way of giving queer people access to a faith that they were rejected from. And if that causes offence, I understand that. But the Catholic Church has been causing offence to queer people for generations, and we don't turn up outside your churches and protest.
What are your thoughts on that, Antonia? That, you know, there could have been people there who are being accused of being offensive, but they themselves have felt some offence coming from the church over the years, or have their own relationship with Christianity. Maybe they were raised like Etc. Catholic.
Yeah. I just want to say, like, I apologise for the way that you guys were treated and the trauma that you've experienced within the church, because that's ultimately not right. And that's not what Christ teaches. And you shouldn't have ever been made to feel like you're an outsider and you're rejected, because the message that Christ teaches is that he loves everybody. But I think in saying that, if you say that if everybody who's been oppressed by something can then reclaim imagery and, you know, use that to make it however they want and express it in a way that they feel is right, then a lot of people who have experienced hate or rejection from different organizations, from different religions, different people, different individuals, can then use that as well. And I feel like that is more divisive than it is uniting. I don't know what the expression is other than mockery.
Expression through art and expression to have free speech through artistic expression. Mm. I think that is a right that should exist in any democratic society.
I agree.
And yeah. I think that people, again, are allowed to be offended by that, and they can have their response. And I don't think the response of anyone that has come from what they saw inside the Divine Playhouse should be silenced either. I think people are entirely allowed to express that response. I think people are entirely allowed to protest. What I disagree with and find, I suppose, the more troubling issue, the fact that this has now become an issue where the landlords of the property have buckled under this pressure. It impacts people's livelihoods. It sets a terrible precedent.
I totally hear you. But for example, for me, I'm an everyday Catholic. Do you see from our perspective how it can be really disrespectful? And obviously you guys have had damage done to you, but it's like reciprocating that with damage.
And in the same way, that is your perspective. But I've talked to a lot of everyday Catholics. I mean, and they didn't have an issue with it.
Yeah.
So I think in the same way that you can't lump in everyone that was was at the church as being like, you know, there were people coming up to the doors and screaming that we were demons and to come out Satan. And you can't.
And that's not right. No, that's not right.
It's not right. But in the same way that I can't lump every single Christian or Catholic as having the same opinion as these hardcore fundamentalists, not everyone involved in any kind of queer organization is deliberately acting in a way to mock a religion.
I know you said that you have Catholics in your life that you've spoken to. A lot of people do find it disrespectful. And if we sit and say to somebody who's been offended, sorry, you don't have a right to feel offended, how will we progress peacefully as a society? It will just continue to be hate upon hate upon hate. Because I have some queer people in my life and gay people, gay Christians, who don't appreciate what happened at the Divine Playhouse and they think it was wrong. It's important to note that you can't tell somebody who's been feeling disrespected and offended, sorry, you don't have a right to feel that way. Because we wouldn't say that to you.
In a way, many have, because our feelings are that we've been disrespected and hurt by the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And so we are expressing that through art.
Yes, but you got a grant from the government. You were able to start up in a church that was deconsecrated 100%.
Churches don't pay tax.
Yeah, but at the same time, you have the Pride Parade, you have all these queer venues, you have all these places to celebrate yourself. I don't understand why it had to be with those sacred items. In the church, it's deconsecrated, okay, but the theme of the night and the theme of the nightclub was Catholic based.
Would you have felt differently, Antonia, and other people with similar views to you, if it was in a different building? The same thing, but just in a different building?
No, it's the same thing. If it's in a different building, but they're using the same items, the crucifix, Mother Mary statue, unholy water, the body of Christ, I would feel the same way.
And that is where you draw the line, and other people will draw the line somewhere else. In a free democratic society where people are allowed to express themselves through art, that's the burden that we live with in order to have democracy, is that not everything that happens in our society we're going to agree with.
I guess one of the other arguments that's been coming up as well, et cetera, is that some have said they feel there's a different standard for Christians because, you know, they can't imagine a similar event being held with an Islamic theme or a Hindu theme or something like that. What do you make of that argument?
There are plenty of spaces around Australia. There's Mary's Poppin is a gay bar in Adelaide that takes place in a deconsecrated synagogue. At the front of the synagogue, they have the Star of David, and that's been painted over to be an upside down pink triangle. I've seen McDonald's in old churches.
Even those, I don't think that should be an excuse then to say what we did at the Divine Playhouse is okay.
Because it's not an excuse.
Even the synagogue, right? For me, that's not right.
I think the main thing is we're going to have a difference of opinion because for you, religion is one of the most important things in your life.
Yeah.
For a lot of us, it's completely irrelevant.
100%.
And we live in a secular society.
And I'm glad that we have those different opinions and we live in a country that you can have that opinion and I can. But that's my question. What is the point of the art? What is the intent?
Unfortunately, art is divisive. I don't think at any point in no conversation that I was part of was there concerns raised that any of the activity happening within the church would be an issue. From the people within the queer community who had come from religious backgrounds, speaking to people that we knew who came from religious backgrounds, we didn't consider the wider community of every single Catholic or Christian
and
their
opinions. That's the problem, because they have been previously Catholic. They're not Catholic. And they didn't take into consideration the wider community.
There are people within the community around the Divine Playhouse who are actively practicing
Catholics.
Who are
part of the leadership team?
Part of the leadership team? I can't confirm that.
Well, that's my point. If there was to be a point made that is this offensive versus divisive, shouldn't there be someone from the actual community to represent that?
Because we're not creating a church. We're not creating a space for Christians or Catholics. We're creating an arts venue.
Yeah, but you're using our imagery.
You don't own that imagery.
But it deeply resonates with us for a different reason for you. Yours is coming from a place of negative experience. Ours is from a place of positivity. So can you understand how it's really insulting?
But that's not our fault that it comes from negative. That is being inflicted on us beyond our control.
But that doesn't mean you take it back and then mock it. Because it's a mockery. It's being made a mockery.
Well,
it's not.
Again,
you
don't get to control how people interpret their experiences and their lives.
Yeah, and the same way you don't get to interpret what people find offensive.
No, and you can find it offensive.
Yeah.
And you can find it as offensive as you want. And that's just how, that's our difference of opinion.
But I think, though, if we let that be the staple for everybody's experiences in a negative religion or with a person who has done something negative to them individually or with a group, it ends up becoming chaos.
But can I just ask, what's the actual impact of us mocking at past events? Has anyone's safety been impacted? Is there an issue with people's livelihoods, with their work, with their jobs?
Why does that need to be
I'm just asking. No. Is there anything past people being offended by what is happening within that church?
No, but I don't think that there needs to be anything past that for people to say that I actually want this taken away.
And people can say that that's what they want.
We're going to have to end it there. Again, I really want to thank you both for coming on and being so respectful. And it has been nice to just be able to take some of the heat out of it and get to some of those core issues, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Dave.
And Catholic creator Antonia Janji, really appreciate you coming
in
as well.
Thank you so much, Dave.
And some big opinions there. And if you want to hear the full debate, it's going to be on Hack's podcast feed on Saturday. You can listen to it on Hack's Deep Dive. Got a lot of messages coming through. Someone saying Muslim or Jewish people wouldn't accept disrespects like this, so why should the Catholics? Another person, though, saying, I think people are mistaking offence for harm. If the play caused offence, that's very different to people being harmed by the church. Another person saying, go Antonia. Someone else saying, go etc. So very divided. Lots of different opinions on this one. We are going to move on, though, to our long listen of the week. And a warning, this story is pretty heavy. We cover some big themes in here, self-harm and addiction.
Hack. One person died from a drug overdose in Australia every 3.5 hours.
On Triple J.
Did you know every year more people die from drug overdoses in Australia than car crashes? Actually, some recent research has found Australia recorded its deadliest overdose year on record in 2024. So why don't we talk more about it? Well, let's do that. Let's hear from someone who can tell you what it's like getting trapped in addiction as a child and really struggling to get out. His name is Clay Scott. Now, Clay is doing everything he can to turn his life around, and he wants you to hear his story. In an effort to help other people, he's recording his journey on social media. Clay Scott, welcome to Hack.
Thank you so much, Dave.
How long have you been sober?
456 days now, so a little over a year and a few months.
Yeah, that's a while. How's it feel?
Incredible, man. It's a blessing. Like, recovery's a miracle. It truly is.
You've been through a lot, Clay.
Yeah.
In your life. Do you remember when you tried drugs for the first time?
Yeah, absolutely. The first drug that I used and the first time I tried it was cannabis, and it was actually at school, like during lunchtime. A couple of the friends in my year that I had like a bong. And
you were how old, Clay?
I was 12.
Was there a lot going on in your personal life at that point that you feel maybe was pushing you into using drugs? Like, were you in a pretty unhappy place?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always struggled with sort of anxiety, not feeling like I necessarily fit in. I never really excelled at anything like sports-wise and stuff. I was good, but never great. And I didn't really have like a really, really solid group of friends. And then the death of my nan as well, who I was extremely, extremely close with, not realizing it at the time how severely that affected me. When I lost her, that was my rock, my safe place. So started searching for ways to escape, and that was drugs.
How close were you with her? Like, what was your relationship like?
Oh, incredible. Like, she, even the belief that I carry within myself now, I am capable, was instilled by her at a very young age. Yeah, she was sort of the first person to really, truly, like, tell me how special I am and make me believe that. So when I lost her, it was pretty tough.
How did things progress?
Weekend usage with friends and go to the skate park, started going to, you know, like little house parties and things like that. And that's sort of when like other drugs came into the mix. Alcohol as well, ecstasy, MDMA, LSD as well was one that I started taking quite young, around the age of 15. Ice, Xanax, all of that stuff sort of after the age of 18. I left school. They asked me to leave because I was just not doing anything while I was there. So those substances sort of got introduced alongside my continuing declining mental health, relationship breakdown when I left school.
Yeah, what was your mental health like?
Shocking. Absolutely terrible. I think my greatest fear was having to spend a day inside of my own head. I couldn't stand to live with myself I knew that my nan watching over me wasn't proud of me. My family wasn't proud of my actions. And then I'd feel guilty. And then I'd feel shame. And then I'd use more drugs to get rid of the shame. And the cycle would just repeat itself.
What was your relationship like with the rest of your family at that point?
Pretty rough. So I got kicked out of home for the first time when I was 14. And then I ran away from home after that. But my parents did not know what to do. They absolutely did the best that they could. I was in and out of home. I'd disappear for weeks at a time and then just rock back up.
Like, it sounds like a really chaotic, intense time for you. Were you worried that you weren't going to survive?
On paper, I should not be here. I didn't think that I was going to be here when I was 23. I didn't really expect that I was going to make it past, you know, the age of 21. And I kind of accepted the dangers of that lifestyle as just part of the game.
Were you seeing overdoses, or did you overdose yourself?
I personally had tried to take my own life via overdose multiple times, and for whatever reason, didn't work. Very grateful for that. But outside of myself, I actually administered Narcan to somebody who overdosed in my house where I was living at the time, and sort of brought her back. And then I also lost a good mate when I was a kid to a drug-induced heart attack as well.
I'm sorry to hear that. It must have been a really tough thing to deal with at such a young age.
Yeah. I really couldn't see a way out. I genuinely could not see the light at the end of the tunnel. In those moments, I just wanted to feel nothing.
When was the first time you were arrested?
9 days after I turned 18.
And what happened there?
So I was waiting for a friend. It was completely by chance that the police, they asked if they could search me. I just said, yeah, sure. They were going into my bag and they were like, is there anything you need to tell me about? I was like, no. Oh.
Forgot a few things.
Survival instincts or bloody hot chip. I told them what was in my bag. I've always been under the impression if you're already caught, you're caught. There's no point in making it worse for yourself.
So what did you have on you?
I had 39 capsules of MDMA.
You ended up being charged a second time.
I got arrested trying to evade a RBT because I was driving disqualified and on cocaine. That got me on an intensive corrections order. And then last year, I was still on that ICO. I've gone to send a fucking package through the post to my mate in Queensland, and they've picked it up that there's weed in there or whatever. And 3 weeks later, the police have come knocking on my door.
It's pretty hectic stuff, Clay. You're sending drugs in the mail.
Yeah. Unfortunately, at that time, my auntie was down on holidays, so she had to witness this whole thing. It made it so much worse. But nobody in my family's experienced anything like this. Nobody in my family's been to jail. Nobody does hard drugs.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Clay Scott. He's 23 and he's recovering from a drug addiction. And, you know, it's a heavy chat, so a warning, there is some bad language and we're touching some heavy themes in here. Clay, you did end up in jail, in a maximum security prison in Sydney. What was that like?
Fucking terrifying. The best way I could describe it is if you took all of the bad kids from your local school district and put them in a school camp and then amplified their egos by 1,000.
Yeah,
that's kind of what you get. It really showed me what my future would be. And that was definitely the turning point for me. I got onto a program called the Drug Court Program, which sends you to rehabilitation and then monitors you once you go back into the community. So very, very grateful for that.
Was it hard coming off the drugs?
Thankfully, by the time that I got to rehab, I'd already been incarcerated for 3 months. The first 3 weeks of being incarcerated were absolute hell. Constant nightmares because I'd smoked weed for literally a decade. The REM sleep debt that I was in was incredible. So the dreams that I was having were so incredibly vivid of getting stabbed in the face and getting held up at gunpoint and just reliving all of these moments. I was sweating constantly. I could barely sleep. Anxiety was through the roof.
You just showed me a scar there on your face. What's that, Clay?
So got into a dispute over drug money and stuff. And yeah, I ended up getting stabbed in the face.
It's a big scar. You're so lucky.
I know. Any any lower, you would have got me right in the carotid artery or my jugular.
You've had a few lucky escapes, Clay. Like, honestly, like, I know that you've had some bad luck as well, but there's also been a bit of good luck. You've had someone looking out for you, maybe.
Absolutely. No, I'm not necessarily religious, but I definitely owe that to, you know, my higher power, which is my nan.
Do you think your nan would be proud of where you are now?
Fuck. I really hope so.
Were you able to think of her during the addiction?
No, I really couldn't. I avoided that at all costs because just thinking about her, knowing what she saw in me and what she would expect of me and knowing that I was not even close to living up to anything that she would have ever wanted for me was probably the scariest reality and like why I still get choked up talking about her now.
I can tell that, like, this is a really hard thing for you to talk about.
Yeah.
I reckon she would be super proud of you.
Thank you.
What you've achieved has been amazing, Clay.
Thank you.
A lot of people don't, and they end up not being able to recover. Why have you decided to go on social media and be so open about what you've been through and, you know, come on this radio show and talk about it to the whole country?
That's an excellent question. Never once in my life did I ever imagine that I would be sitting here in a Triple J studio. I'm beyond grateful. But I share my story and my recovery because the scared, lonely, anxious kid that I was, knowing that I could become the man that I am today through recovery, I want other people to be able to achieve that because it has been nothing short than life-changing.
There will be someone listening now, Clay, who is struggling with addiction, and it could be anything. It could be same stuff that you were struggling with, could be something completely different, but they will also feel trapped and they will feel like that there's no escape. What's your advice in terms of taking that first step?
I think the first step for anybody, it's low friction. It's not a commitment like going to a rehab. Go on na.org.au and look up your local Narcotics or Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and get yourself to a meeting ASAP. I know it's terrifying. I know that it's going to be daunting. You don't have to speak. Nobody's going to make you speak, but just go there. See that you're not alone because addiction is an isolating disease and the opposite of addiction is connection.
Clay, you're feeling really good about your life now and where you've landed. Have you managed to repair some of those relationships with your family?
I'd say the relationships with my family has been the biggest thing that I've gotten back externally. All of my friends that I have around like me and the fitness community and stuff, I've never been supported like this in my entire life. I'm so incredibly grateful to have cultivated such a beautiful life that is worth protecting.
What are you doing now, Clay?
I still work part-time with my old man as a gyp rocker, and then I also work part-time at a supplement store, and on top of that, am starting my own online coaching business and hopefully helping people that are struggling the same way that I was.
You finished your sentence this month, right?
Yeah.
How's that going to feel, do you think?
Oh, it's going to be so nice to close that chapter of my life officially. I will still be on a good behavior bond for 8 months, but not, you know, having to go to court once a month. I don't think there's been a year since I turned 18 that I haven't had to go to a courtroom. So it's going to be a massive just mental strain off my mind.
Are you worried or anxious about falling into addiction again, about doing drugs again?
It's definitely not on the bucket list, but to say that the desire or the possibility of it is completely void would be a lie. I don't think, you know, once you get sober, you just stop being an addict. As long as I continue to live my life through my values, I will never go back to drugs. But a part of that is also accepting the fact that the addictive personality and tendencies are over there doing push-ups in the corner waiting for me to slip up, so to speak.
Clay, what do you hope your life looks like in 10 years' time? Do you think much about the future?
Look, I've got big dreams. It'd be really nice to have a family and a loving partner at the very least. I just want to live a life that I am fulfilled with. I really hope that I can continue to, you know, affect and inspire people in positive ways. If you are in that dark place right now, I know how fucking bad it sucks. And I know how scary it is feels way worse than the familiar pain that you're experiencing. But please seek out help, support, tell somebody, because it will genuinely change your life the way that it's changed mine and so many other people.
Well, I'm sure you've helped a lot of people just in this chat. Clay Scott, it's been such a pleasure to get to know you. Thanks for joining us on Hack.
No, thank you, Dave.
And if you do want to hear Clay's full story, the full interview, you can check it out on the Hack podcast. We put extended interviews, long listens up every single week, every Thursday morning, really early in time for your commute, whatever it is. We're hearing from a lot of people on the text line. But before that, a reminder, the National Alcohol and Drug and Other Hotline is always there. 24/7 phone service provides counselling, advice, information. You can call them on 1-800-250-015. On Hack's Instagram, someone saying, good on you, Clay, shining a light on addiction and showing others that you can come back from it. Someone else saying, it's good to hear a recovery story. So many people need to hear this. Well done, Clay. Another person saying, shout out to the boys in Clarence, Wello and Junie. And another person saying, Clay, your nan would be proud of you. And I think we all agree with that. You can follow Clay on Instagram and TikTok, at Clay Raymond. Also getting a lot of messages through on the Divine Playhouse debate that we had earlier. A lot of people really interested in that. It's been a controversial issue over the past few days. Someone saying, that was a great debate. I wish people could have more of these. Another person saying, really impressed by the debate. All people spoke so well and were respectful in their discussions, and that gives me hope for our country's future. Someone else saying, I think the church should be able to accept mockery. Many in the queer and gay community have been subjected to a lot of religious hate and indoctrination that they have escaped. They should be allowed to have their own events. All right, that is all we've got time for on Hack for now. I'll be back with the shake-up tomorrow.
Hack on Triple J.